It is great having you with us here today, and we are talking about Beethoven and its many different forms that you've seen, experienced Beethoven before, and I feel like I have a particularly special connection to Beethoven. And this is a story my dad has told my whole life, but when they were going through the names of like 10,000 names to name their first child, and I was the first child, my dad was absolutely sold that they should name me Bait. Because he couldn't wait for a teacher to call out, is Beethoven here today? Beethoven. Now, thank goodness, my mom had more sense and talked him out of that, so I ended up as Chadhoven, not Beethoven. But it's my favorite story my dad tells. A little bit about Beethoven. When he had conducted his ninth symphony, he was almost completely deaf at that point. He had been losing his hearing since the third symphony. But he had been preparing, and everyone gathered together to hear the ninth symphony written while deaf. The orchestra was there, had been preparing for weeks and months, because to actually do Beethoven's music took a lot of work, because he did things that seemed impossible to play and impossible to sing. He wanted to be there to conduct the orchestra, but of course he couldn't hear. So the conductor that day, who was conducting the orchestra, invited him in. He was there toward the front to conduct. But he turned to the orchestra and said, whatever you do, don't look at him. He is going to be conducting the orchestra in his head, and it's going to be wonderful, but we're conducting the orchestra in the room. So sure enough, the conductor that day conducted the orchestra, magnificent display of the Ninth Symphony. Meanwhile, with his eyes closed, arms wailing the entire time, Beethoven's conducting the music he can hear in his head in the same room at the same time. But his orchestra didn't get done at the same time as the main orchestra. When the main orchestra finished his symphony, everyone erupted in applause and cheers and claps. Meanwhile, he is still going at it, not even aware, because he's so caught up in the music that they are cheering and celebrating. That Caroline Unger came over and tapped him on the shoulder. What? Why is everyone standing? Why is everyone applauding? We're not even, we got a third of it left to go. A man so passionate about music, he wrote when he was deaf and still conducted even when he couldn't hear. Now, he had a tough upbringing. He actually grew up in this house, and he was named after his grandfather, a very famous conductor and composer. So he had a lot to live up to. But he also had a difficult childhood, because his father was an alcoholic, and his father really needed his son to be famous. And it was very, very hard on him, besides being very strict and legalistic about the way they approached music lessons. He would often drag him out at night, practice, 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 practice. When he was 6 years old, he began to advertise his son's skills as a six-year-old prodigy. He wanted to be 6 years old because he wanted to have him compete with the previous prodigy, which was Mozart. And people began to come and hear him play, and he was magnificent. Overcoming a lot of reputation of his grandfather, a lot of challenges in his family from his dad. But the whole time he really wanted to be creative, and he kept being told, you gotta stay in the lines, you gotta do what you're taught and no more. So he begins taking more music lessons later on at this little church, where the music director was equally, no improvising, this isn't jazz, you know, the equivalent of, I want you to stay focused on the rules and play the notes that are played. He kept wanting to get out of the box, but they kept trying to keep him in the box. Was in his 20s, he began to play at this church known as Court Church, or the Electoral Palace Church, and here he began to push the envelope, always pushing against tradition, pushing against the music from before, the rules from before. He would turn to the ladies in the choir and say, just wait till you hear this today. And it would come time for his musical piece on this giant organ, and he would launch into what he described as a wild imagination of play. He got done. Rather than thunderous applause, it was just like, we've never seen this in church. And the pastor came up and said, if you ever do that again, we're going to fire you. Can you imagine being the guy who fired Beethoven? It's like the guy didn't want Tiger Woods to play golf or something. I mean, just amazing, right? Or Michael Jordan, not able to play basketball. But even at 20, it is seen that he has this ability to have this creative way of thinking outside the box and bring something new to music and passion that had never been seen before, as both a composer as well as a conductor. If you think about a good composer, think about a conductor, what do they do, right? A conductor brings the best out of us, the musicians. A composer brings the best out of the music. To compose something that hasn't been heard before, something grab our hearts or grab our attention or move us in ways that are unique. Then the conductor can take all the musicians and bring that composition and bring it to life. What if we don't just need that when we listen to music? What if we need that in life? What if we need someone to direct us and bring the best out of us? What if we could know that with someone composing the music of our life and taking the sharps and the flats and the minor chords and major chords and putting it all together into a masterful melody? Well, the God of the Bible says he's come in that way. He wants to do that for each one of us, to be both that conductor and that composer, to bring joy and comfort and rhythm to our life. So let me talk about two aspects of that. First, what does it look like to compose joy in the midst of dissonance? Right, music often has dissonance, and yet we often have dissonance in our life. How do we find joy in the midst of the dissonance? How do we find ways in which there's some melody that makes sense of all those sour notes that seemingly don't seem to fit or we didn't prepare for or like? I mean, Beethoven certainly had this, right? He didn't want, in fact, he almost got suicidal at point because he could not hear the music that he so loved so desperately. In fact, Jonathan, our piano player, was telling me that there was a moment that his doctors were trying to diagnose his deafness. And they said, you need to go on vacation. Maybe that'll kind of calm the stress down or whatever. Well, it turned out, they're not sure exactly today why he had deafness. It could be a bone growth that causes it. It also could be lead poisoning. They did some tests and thought there might be lead poisoning that caused it. Whatever it was, he couldn't control it, and that vacation didn't help. So he wrote a journal entry you can even see today. And in that journal entry, he pretty much says, despite what I can't control, the dissonance of my deafness, I am committed to my music and to make the music that's in me regardless. And that became a vow of a man who wasn't going to wallow in bitterness. He wasn't going to stay isolated like he had on that vacation. He instead wanted to engage in life despite the challenges. So how in the world do you write compositions if you're deaf? How would you do it? Pretty ingenious. He took a stick and he would stick it in his ear and he'd put it up to the piano. This allowed him to feel the notes moving. And this is how he composed many of his pieces, is hearing the music and trying to get that bone conduction into his skull. Much like we have bone conduction earphones today, he used a stick to compose many of these most beautiful symphonies. One of which is called the Pastoral Symphony. It's a multi-stage movement. And in this movement, it paints a story. In the opening piece of the Pastoral Symphonies, we walk through the countryside with flowers and beauty. Then as we move through the piece, we get a thunderstorm coming. Dissonance, struggle, challenge coming our way. What do you do when dissonance come into your life? And then the final movement is a shepherd's song of thanksgiving and calm, that there can be joy and calm and thankfulness even when the storms of life come your way. And that shepherd's song has moved people for decades, and it was composed in deafness. Now, how popular is Beethoven? Well, it's hard to know, like, what do you measure that by? But by annual sales, about 100 million people have bought Beethoven. As a reference point to that, 500 million people have bought the Beatles, 347 million Michael Jackson, Elvis Presley, 325, 249 for Taylor Swift, 227 for Eminem, and there's Beethoven way up there as a musician who has impacted the world. If you add all those numbers together, you get 1.85 billion in sales. But there was someone 1000 BC who wrote a pastoral symphony about shepherds that's had an even higher impact. He was a shepherd, He was a musician, he was a warrior, and he was a king. His name was David, King David. You might know him from slaying of Goliath, but he did a lot more than that. And what he's mostly known for is his musicianship. 7 billion copies of the Bible have been sold, and David wrote 73 songs in the Bible. If you figure 10 songs per album, that'd be 7 albums have hit 7 billion sales by King David. That means that his influence as a musician is 40 times all the other artists combined. And if Beethoven wrote a song about a shepherd's thanksgiving after a storm, let's read what David wrote about a shepherd. And you may not recognize this as a song, but I bet you recognize this as a scripture reading at a funeral. It's called Psalm 23. And the word psalm comes from the book of Psalms, which is a songbook in the Hebrew Bible. And here again, we see a shepherd giving voice to finding calm and peace and joy in the midst of dissonance. Now, we don't know what the rhythm sounds like musically, but we can hear it in the poetry. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his namesake. Now look at the dissonance. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. There's dissonance, there's death. I will fear no evil. More dissonance. But I can find joy, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me in the midst of that. You prepare a table before me. In the presence of my enemies, I can still have joy. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me. I get this joy and goodness always following me all the days of my life. And because of that, I can know I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Joy and comfort in the midst of dissonance. Now, there have been many artists who have listened to Beethoven, and they have tried as artists to put into artwork what they hear in the music. One of those did a really simple drawing, a very simple line in his book. It's Kalinsky is his last name, but Wasily Kandinsky. And he wrote a book called Point and Plane, A Point and Line to Plane. And in here, he tried to listen to classical music, lots of different artists, feel what it felt like, imagine what it felt like, and tried to draw what he was feeling. Now, he was a modern artist. In this particular picture, it was a very simple drawing. Like, I think I could do that one, right? But he took a piece of Beethoven, and he just did simple notes, simple ideas, and showed what sustaining would look like as a piece of modern art. Some of his other pieces are a lot more sophisticated and a lot more challenging. This is a piece of modern art he created to kind of give voice to what he sensed was going on inside the music when he listened to not only Beethoven, but specifically Beethoven's Fifth Movement. So we thought it would be interesting to listen to Beethoven's Fifth and combine it with this piece of art, but we've applied the AI model to it. And so we're going to see what would happen if this piece of art could come to life as we listen to Beethoven's Fifth. Can we invite Jonathan back up on stage? Jonathan, come on up, man.
Thank you.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I taught him everything he knows. Now, you hear a piece of music like that, and you can hear all the different notes, right? And like, in any particular note, you say, but I don't want that note in my life or that note in my life. But all of them combined create this joy and movement and give voice to something inside of us in so many different ways. And what if there was a way in which the composer who makes these different movements in your life could tell you there could be peace from a shepherd after a thunderstorm? Like Beethoven's fifth movement, there could just be something that grabs those notes and brings joy in the midst of dissonance. The second thing we're going to look at composing is a rhythm to life. All of us would love to have a rhythm that works, a rhythm to set our pace to. Times that we feel reinforced, times that the contrast in our life could make sense, things that could build on top of other ideas. And like I said, we don't know exactly what David composed and what it sounded like, but in the poetry, we can discover these things, reinforcement and contrasting and build. So it's interesting because when he wrote King David, he uses three types of a poetry. And that poetry is called synonymous parallelism. And that is a technique in poetry when you say basically the same thing as the previous line, but it's just slightly enough different. But the synonymous part grabs what you learned before and builds on it. But it's relatively synonymous. The next piece of poetic technique used by David, that's also used by Beethoven, is antithetical parallelism. Now you use contrasting ideas in music or in poetry to grab your attention. There's soft moments and loud moments. There's sharps and there's flats. There's big moments, and there's quieter, smaller moments. And those contrasts make for the movement. We'll see how he does that as well. Then thirdly, there's something called progressive parallelism. This is the ideas don't rhyme with each other, but they build on each other. It's not identical to the one before it. It's a new idea, but each one fills together to create a main thought. And this, by the way, I've been trying to get in the band for years. And Kenny will never let me in, so this is my big moment. So just kind of... let me bask in this for a second. My mom, those 2 months of piano lessons she gave me in sixth grade are finally going to show off here. Somebody said, Chad, I heard you're going to be tickling the ivories today. I said, well, with my skills, it'd be more like tinkling on the ivories. But here we go. So the first technique King David uses is called synonymous parallelism. And that is where it's relatively the same thing, a little bit different key. He's going to repeat an idea, but each time it's related to the same thing, but it gives you a little bit more insight. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. What does a shepherd do anyway? Well, let me tell you. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. Oh, I need some time to know how to rest. What else does he do? He leads me beside still waters. He shows me how to nourish myself. What else? He restores my soul. Sometimes I turn myself into a machine and I lose track of my soul. What else does he do? He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his namesake. See, each one of those is related to being a shepherd, but each one gives you a little bit bigger piece, a little touch of what it looks like if you want this shepherd in your life. Now, Beethoven does this, right, with synonymous ideas. As you heard in the song, da-da-da-dun, da-da-da-dun, right? They're synonymous, but they change a few notes in there. Using different rhythms captures our heart. It gives voice to something. I feel sad, I feel really sad. I feel excited, I feel really excited. That's what poetry and music can do. That's what David does here. What's interesting about Psalm 23 is he uses all three techniques. Second thing, you see him using antithetical parallelism, a contrast. In general, didn't we just hear all nice things, right? Shepherd, that sounds good, that sounds good, that sounds good, that sounds good. Now he's going to take that good stuff and show how the good stuff can work in the midst of the bad stuff. I saw a conductor, one of my favorite talks, I'll give you a little more detail in a moment, but he was the conductor for the Philharmonic Orchestra in Boston. He said, you want to know how to make a B note sad? You add a C. It's not too sad. Add a C. you want to make it really sad, you add a B and then three Cs. And he said, if you're really feeling the music, you can't be sitting on two butt cheeks. You got to do one butt cheek. Now, notice how we start seeing what it means to be a shepherd in the midst of the dissonance, of the sadness. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a place for me, even in the presence of my enemies. Oh, that's some dissonance. And so now it's like, oh, that shepherd's not just good for the good times, he's also good for the challenging times. Sharp contrast makes impact in the poetry. Then thirdly, he uses what's called progressive parallelism, and this is where these ideas are going to build on top of each other, like one on top of another, on top of another. It's almost like you'd put a chord chart together, right? You're putting a chord together. You'd say one note, two notes, three notes, four notes, or middle C. They build on each other. Totally different from each other, but they put something together, and that's what he does here in this last section, right? You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And now, we don't know exactly what his sounded like, but the poetry is calling out to you that way. So Jonathan came in this week, and he was practicing his thing. We're going over camera angles and stuff, and I told him what I was doing. And he says, well, you could just try this and this and this and this. And he like was working with three hands, and I'm like, no, I can hit two notes, one finger at a time. He said, well, what if I compose something for you? So how about we move from the outhouse to the penthouse, and let's invite Jonathan to come back, and I will read this, and we'll have him compose something. Come on down. I also thought, you know, as a pastor, I should have this memorized, but I cannot play the piano and read Psalm 23 while speaking at the same time. So here we go.
I did it with two butt cheeks.
It's a two butt cheek play here. Here we go. All right, now I want you to feel the music, feel the lyrics, and feel these movements together. Here we go. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. In fact, he restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, but I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me, even in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Awesome job, man. Can we thank Jonathan one more time? That was awesome, man. That's as close as I'm going to get to ever singing on this stage as well. So there you go. We want a rhythm to take the notes and the things happening in my life and make it make sense of everything going on. So I told you one of my favorite talks I've ever heard in a leadership conference was by a guy named Benjamin Zander. And Benjamin Zander is a Boston Philharmonic Orchestra conductor. And a group of us from the church went up to Chicago to hear him speak. He's been doing it a lot since then. You can catch him on TED Talks and things like that. But it was my favorite talk I've ever heard at a leadership conference and a creative conference. First thing he did is he said, everyone here loves classical music. We raised our hands, like 20% raised their hand. He goes, no, it just hasn't been played the right way. You love it, you just never experienced it correctly. He said, that's leadership. You gotta be confident where you're going. He said, let me tell you what I do as a conductor. I have to take a group of musicians, the best in the world, who have played this piece of music 100,000 times, but we need to play it today like we've never played it before. I thought, man, that is leadership. How do you not let all the systems in life just kind of get into the background, go into coast mode? He goes, my job as a conductor is to make this the first time and best time you've ever played and ever heard this piece of music. He said, for many of us, he sat down, he said, heard Beethoven like this. Da-da-da-dun.
Da-da-da. What's for lunch? Da-da-dun-dun.
He said, the way he played it, the notes are coming so fast and so passionate. When the music was first released to the band or to the musicians, the orchestra, they thought, he's got to be kidding. This can't be played. Da-da-da-dun. It's designed to come out and grab your attention. When it's played the way he wrote it, it's composed to grab you by the throat and grab your attention. And then what he did, I'll never forget this. He said, let me show you what conducting looks like. We're in an auditorium, about 3,000 people at the time. Does anyone have a birthday, he said. One guy on the floor stood up. He goes, stand up. This guy stood up. We're going to sing happy birthday to, what's your name, John? So we all sang, all 3,000 of us. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. We get all done. He's like, pathetic. All right, now, what we're going to do is now I want you to, everybody, as you're singing happy birthday, I want you to look at John, and when we get to the part, happy birthday to you, I want everybody to point at John. And John's like, whoa, this is like the biggest birthday I ever had. So he's up there, happy birthday to 3,000 people, you, happy birthday to you. And now, when you think of John, I want you to say that one louder. Happy birthday to John, happy birthday to you. Went through this like 3 or 4 times, and each time we got better. He was conducting us to take a song we've heard 1,000 times and doesn't really, you know, supposed to go through the motions. And man, by the time we were done, it was the greatest happy birthday song I've ever heard in my life. Can I tell you that? And the point was, as leaders, you've got people around you, you've got people you're leading above you, you've got people you're leading underneath you in an organization around you. How do you take the mundane and make it fresh again? That's what conductors do. You make it alive again. And man, I just came alive in that way of thinking about that. So every year we do, you know, 7 to 10 Christmas Eve services. And backstage we say the same thing. This is not our third service. This is not our sixth service. This is someone's first service. We want to deliver this with as much passion, with as much authenticity and ownership every single service. And I got that from listening to Benjamin 25 years ago. To bring your full self to your work, your full self to the table, right? Someone needs to set the rhythm and set the pace as a leader of what it looks like to bring your full self to what you do and how you do it so you don't end up coasting, right? There's a rhythm to that. There's a magic to that. Like I said, there's many artists who tried to take Beethoven's music and bring it to life. There's another one who took his pastoral symphonies, that storm followed by that shepherd's voice of calm and thankfulness. Now, we spent 6 months trying to get rights to this piece of art. We couldn't get it. So this is an AI rendition of something close. So if you want to look it up, it's called Shepherd's Song, Cheerful and Thankful Feelings After a Storm by Tommaso Di Maio. But it looks very similar to this. And he wanted to paint a picture of walking through that countryside with all those flowers and what it felt like as you're listening to Beethoven. The movements of what it felt like to have that calm and that peace and taking moments to experience the beauty all around you, just taking it in before maybe the storm comes. And then the next movement, he had another painting about the storm coming. And then another painting about what happens after the storm. The rhythm of calm, reflection, storm and fear, and then again, thankfulness. All in the pastoral symphony of a shepherd. Now, David did that at 1000 BC. And when he did that, he did it in such a way to describe something that we all hungered for, that we're not alone in this life, that the notes of our life don't have to be meaningless and purposeless. We all need a conductor to bring the best out of us in life, but also a composer for life to let us know that the best of the music and the circumstances that are played in our life can bring joy and wonder and rhythm and purpose to us. So here's my challenge if you want to engage in our series for the next 8 weeks together or 6 weeks. What if we're all looking for a way to find transcendent music? Transcendent music that handles the rhythms of the minor and major chords in your life. Like that's what I want. I want a transcendent rhythm to handle the major and minor chords of life. And look how David ended his song. He said, "Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life." But mercy and goodness, like arithmetic or philosophy, that's a concept. Goodness doesn't follow you, it's a thing. Mercy doesn't follow you, it's a thing, but not here. He said, no, goodness and mercy follows you. Why? Because in his song, the goodness and mercy is a person, it's the shepherd. You can know God is with you and he's good. You can know God can comfort you and he's merciful. He doesn't give you what you deserve, he gives you better than you deserve. And when you know that a person, a shepherd, is following you all the days of your life, you can eventually get to heaven. You'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever, but he dwells with you now. It brings a rhythm and purpose and meaning to your life now. John Kirby, one of our Connections pastors, every time that he is praying for somebody, one of his favorite psalms to pray over people is this song. He'll pray, I know you're going through a tough time and challenging time, but let's just pray that God would allow you to know that he's with you and goodness and mercy will follow you all the days of your life. I have seen over the last 20-something years, probably, I don't know, 50 to 100 people John has prayed over at funerals, at hospitals, going through crisis after service. We want to know we're not alone. We want to know there's transcendent rhythms when we have those minor chords and those major chords in life. Here's a quote from Beethoven to show how the role Jesus played in his life. This comes from a couple different journal entries he wrote and one song he wrote. He said, "Socrates and Jesus were my models. Divine one, you see into my inmost soul. You know the love of humanity and desire to do good that dwells in me or within me. This is Jehovah's son. Behold him, in the earth he lies, for his father now hath left him enduring terrible sorrow. The Holy One has now prepared to die a bitter death for sinners. A willing, I love that line, a willing Savior to save a cruel world." Even in the midst of the cruel world, a composer who can't hear, in the midst of turmoil, he found a willing Savior to bring him peace. Now I'm going to invite the band to come out and do this next song. You're going to recognize this one. And when we thought about doing this song, I thought, well, this could come across as sacrilegious after all the other music we're going to do. But then as I got to know Beethoven through his biographies, I realized he would love this song because he was so challenging the status quo. He was like, you know, I don't want to just do it the way you've always done it. What new music is there? What new rhythms are there? What new way is it? And he got kind of crushed and suppressed and held back. And maybe for you, you have felt religion is that way. It's about compressing. It's about holding you back. It's about keeping you, follow the rules, do your own thing. But what if you could find something new, something fresh? What if you could say those old rules and old styles and old melodies, it's time to roll over the old stuff and embrace something new? So as you hear these words from Roll Over Beethoven, recognize that Beethoven did the same thing to the musicians in his day.